Hi, everybody. Welcome to FNS Wrestling Podcast. I am your host, back on a Monday night to do my weekly discussion of some Ring of Honor wrestling. I apologize. I am a little bit late getting around to it today. Had a few things to do. My son had some basketball tryouts, or actually a bit of a exhibition games, so I was out at that. And I'm going to try today. It's been a really, really busy week of wrestling. I watched Impact show on Friday. I watched SummerSlam on Saturday. I watched, what else did I watch? NXT TakeOver on Sunday. I've also watched ROH Glory by Honor Night 2. I have not had a chance to get to Night 1 yet. It's just been a really busy weekend full of wrestling, as I'm sure you're aware if you're a wrestling fan. But I am going to talk about Night 2 really quickly, and then I'm going to move into the weekly offering from ROH, which is Episode 518. I'm not going to go super in-depth on the pay-per-view, but I will talk about each match briefly and give you my thoughts on that before transitioning into the weekly program. So yeah, I don't really have much to say. Thanks for checking out the podcast. If you haven't heard it before, welcome back if you had. Love to hear any feedback. fnswrestling@gmail.com, fns_wrestling_podcast on Instagram, or if you're listening on YouTube, you can easily just leave a comment and I will get back to you, pretty much guaranteed. So that being said, I got a lot to get into, so I figure we can transition right into it. So let's start talking a little bit about Glory by Honor Night 2. So the first match on this Night 2 of Glory by Honor was Dalton Castle. He defeated Danhausen in the opener, which I would consider largely a comedy match. Dak Draper was on commentary for this one. He sort of ran down in support of Dalton Castle at one point. Standard stuff. Danhausen used his teeth. He actually had two jars of teeth in this one. Dalton Castle's boys get involved a couple times. They were baby chicks tonight. At one point, they were in the ring pecking at the teeth on the mat as though it was chicken feed, which was a bit interesting. Castle ended up winning with his bangarang finisher. I thought it was a decent match. I didn't think it was really a hot opener. I'm generally looking for something that's just a sprint, a barn burner of a match to start a show, and I don't think this was. Danhausen, as I've said on this program, is not my cup of tea. I do get that people like him a lot, and that's fine. He's just not for me, really. And with two nights and so many matches, I'm not sure we needed this one. But people do love Danhausen, and I guess this quick match gave them their fix of this guy, because he is very popular, I understand. So I guess they needed to put him on the card, and the match was fine. I don't think it was great, but there wasn't anything really wrong with it either. It was just a lot of comedy, obviously, with Danhausen involved. We then get in the next match. LSG defeated world-famous CB in what was a pure rules match. So this may come up later a few times, probably. But this match had no story and no stakes. So this is ROH simply, I've said it all a lot on this show, they just don't have the time in one-hour show each week to develop characters and stories for all of the talent that they have. So you kind of end up with people thrown together for matches and things like this. Because I haven't seen LSG or World Famous CB on ROH, the TV program, in quite a while. It's been several weeks at least. So with this one, LSG used all of his rope breaks. The match was fine. At one point, CB was on LSG's back, applying a pretty cool submission, pulling LSG's both of his arms behind his back. So LSG had to get a rope break by using his teeth, which I thought was interesting. LSG ended up winning with a crucifix pin, and CB slapped his hand away during the code of honor. So I don't know if this is a hint of sort of a CB heel turn. Josh Woods was on commentary for this one. There's lots of guest commentators on this show, pretty much one for every match, it seems. At one point, Ken Dixon showed up briefly to sort of make fun of the Pure Division, and Woods kind of had to step in and get him to leave. So I'm interested to see where that goes. I kind of like Ken Dixon, and Josh Woods is growing on me, so we'll see where that goes. I thought this was a well-worked match. I'm not really a big fan of either of these two guys, since mostly because they don't have anything going on in ROH right now. So again, it was just kind of a match between two guys we haven't seen in the Pure Division. So it was decent, nothing amazing, but it was a fine match between these two. We then get a women's tag team match where Miranda Alize and Roxy, who are in the women's tournament, they defeated Chelsea Green and Willow. So Chelsea Green was making her debut with ROH, and Maria Kanellis Bennett was on commentary for this one. The other three women were in the women's tournament. Alize and Roxy are still in it at this point, and I think Willow lost in the first round, if I remember correctly. I didn't think Rachel Green did a ton in this match, and it might be due to her arm still being in a cast. I know she may not be fully comfortable. But the other three did get plenty of time in this. There were a couple sloppy spots for sure. I thought Alizé looked better in this match than she did in the first tournament match I saw her in. But on the flip side, I didn't think Roxy looked quite as good as she did in the one tournament match where I was really impressed with her. She's just a 19-year-old, and I thought she looked great, so I wasn't quite as impressed with this match. But Roxy ended up getting the pinfall for her team with the code red that I think is called the Rock Red or the code Rock or something like that. Anyways, it's a code red. She picked up the pinfall. It was a fun enough match, I thought. Nothing really special. That being said, I am interested in seeing more from Willow. She's got an interesting look and sort of this idea that she's just insanely positive all the time. And she has a pretty nice pounce, so I'm interested in seeing more of her, as well as Roxy and Alizé, because ROH is sort of building their women's division here, and I think those three could be a decent part of it from what I've seen so far. So a pretty fun match, a little bit of sloppiness, and not a whole lot from Rachel Green in that one. Next, we get the six-man tag team title match with Incoherence, who I hadn't heard of before, but I've heard of the people in it. So that's Delirious, Hollow Wicked, and Frightmare. I think I've seen Hollow Wicked once before. Frightmare I've heard of, but I don't think I have seen him before. So I'm always interested in seeing somebody new. So they're facing the six-man tag champions, and that is Shane Taylor Promotions. That I'm a big fan of them. I think they're underused at this point. Even though they're champions, they still don't get on TV very often. So that's Shane Taylor, Moses, and Khan. So Ultra Mantis Black, who I don't know is on commentary for this one. I don't find he added a lot. He was sort of just doing some quirky, strange stuff, sort of like they're aliens or something. Anyways, he didn't add much for me. But I thought the match was really fun. It actually presented the masked Chikara guys, former Chikara guys, I think, as legitimate threats at times. They had some pretty cool-looking offense, some pretty reasonable near falls. I think Shane Taylor's awesome. He always looks good. And I feel like Moses and Khan, they seem to get better every time I see them, and I really think there's some massive potential here, especially in Khan, just because he has more of a traditional look. He looks great, and he seems to be getting better all the time. So Shane Taylor hit Frightmare with the Marcus Garvey driver for the pin in what I thought was a really enjoyable match. But again, the challengers for this one aren't even really in ROH, so there wasn't much story behind this. But I guess you can always go with people are just forming three-man teams to try and challenge these guys for the championship. So I guess that's kind of your built-in story. They want the title, so they formed a team and came after them. But I thought the match was really good. We then get Brian Johnson, who's filling in for Jay Briscoe, who was unavailable. So Brian Johnson's pulling double duty because it's in his hometown. So he's going to get a nice pop from the crowd every time. So he's teamed up with Mark Briscoe. They defeated Demonic Flamita and Flip Gordon in, again, a match of people just kind of thrown together, it feels like. So apparently Jay Briscoe was unavailable for COVID protocol, so hopefully everything's okay there. I know Ring of Honor, of all companies, takes it really, really seriously, so they're definitely following the protocols. Johnson did cut his usual heel promo on the way to the ring. It was in front of a home crowd that loved him, so it was a little bit awkward because generally he's trying to generate massive heat because he's just filled with venom and rage, but the crowd loved it in this case, but that was fine. So this was a story sort of about dissension on both teams, as neither of these teams normally work together. So at one point, Briscoe gets shoved into Brian Johnson, and Brian Johnson's just done. He leaves the ring, walks out, and leaves Briscoe all by himself. So Gordon tries to get Flamita to use a chair and cheat, but there's sort of a disagreement, and that leads gives enough time for Mark Briscoe to hit a jig driller to Gordon on the chair for the win, as the ref sort of has to ignore that the chair is sitting there. Even Mark Briscoe sort of made like a sheepish little grin at the camera and then slid the chair out of there. So I thought this was another fine match. Like, nothing wrong with the in-ring stuff, but again, it's just like these teams were thrown together to get maximum people on the show, which I understand. You got two nights, you're trying to get everybody, especially in a pandemic, on shows in front of crowds, so I get that. But again, you have to be somebody who doesn't care much about storylines and characters. You have to be okay with just some good in-ring stuff, which, I mean, if it's good enough, I don't have a problem with that. I'd obviously prefer a story and a great match, but they don't have time to do both of those things, so we're just getting the in-ring stuff tonight. So then the next match is an eight-man tag team match, which has The Foundation, Rhett Titus, Tracy Williams, Jonathan Gresham, and Jay Lethal. They defeated Violence Unlimited, Tony Deppen, Chris Dickinson, Homicide, and Brody King. And for me, this was the best match to this point of the show, and maybe my match of the night. I don't know, the next one I liked quite a bit too. So it was partly about a confrontation between Jonathan Gresham and Brody King. So the biggest man and the smallest man in this match, Gresham's, I think, 5'4". Brody King's probably like 6'5 or something. So they're sort of teasing that basically they wanted to face off with each other, but they sort of held off on giving us that a little bit. There's a little bit of dissension happening in this match, too, in the foundation, as Lethal and Gresham had a couple of spots where they had issues. Lethal delayed Gresham from facing Brody King, despite Gresham wanting to do it at one point. And then I think it was Gresham was basically giving Deppen a chance to tag out. And Jay Lethal took exception to that and thought, you know, why would you do that? Just keep attacking the guy that's, you know, been taking the punishment. So as well in this, Tony Deppen took a lot of punishment. And he had competed the night before. I haven't had a chance to see night one yet. I apologize, but hopefully I'll get around to it. And there's people in the stands holding signed Tony Deppen signs. So there seems to be a movement among the people to get this guy signed. So there's some really good action. Then things kind of broke down near the end with Gresham being driven through a table from the apron by Dickinson. Brody King hits a nice running crossbody to Tracy Williams, who's seated in a chair against the barricade. Looked pretty good. But all of this action on the outside leaves Tony Deppen alone in the ring. He gets hit with the Lethal injection and takes the pinfall from Jay Lethal. So Violence Unlimited lose the match, but then they basically take out the foundation with the signature moves after the match. Dickinson gets on the mic, challenges any pure wrestler, past, present, or future. So I'm wondering if this is hinting at some returning people to answer this challenge with a lot of free agents on the market right now. We'll see where that goes. So I really enjoyed this match, especially the action near the end when things kind of broke down and there was stuff going on the outside leading up to the finish. I thought that was pretty fun. I have seen specifically a lot of Chris Dickinson lately because I didn't know much about him until recently. But the more I see him, the more I'm impressed. I think he's really good. So I'm interested to see where this challenge that he laid down to the Pure Division goes in the future. The next match is a Lucha Rules match featuring LFI. In this case, it is Roosh and Dragon Lee, the brothers, taking on and actually defeating Bandido and Rey Horus. So Silas Young is the guest commentator for this one. He seems to have issues with Rey Horus, even saying that Horus doesn't deserve to have a contract with Ring of Honor. This is one of the matches I was really looking forward to. All of these guys are really good, and Dragon Lee and Bandido are two of my personal favorites, and I like that the Lucha Rules as well. Every now and then, I don't think I could handle a full show of all Lucha Rules, but when it's thrown in once in a while with guys who can work really fast and do some cool stuff, I do enjoy it. So there's some issues with LFI right away. As Roosh attacks Bandito's leg with a chair, Dragon Lee doesn't seem to like it, and actually Roosh ends up grabbing Dragon Lee by the throat. But then Rey Horus sort of attacks to start the match, and they hug a little bit later, I think. So everything seems to be okay, but there was a little bit of a teased issue at the beginning of this. So there's one flurry that includes a top rope Spanish fly and a pop-up cutter. That leaves all four men down. Lee and Bandido then have a crazy exchange leading to some sort of modified destroyer by Bandido before Dragon Lee flips out of the 21 plex, kicks Bandido in the back of the head. Roosh is then selling a hurt knee for quite a bit of this, and I'm wondering if he actually hurt himself. If not, he did a bang-up job of selling it, I'd have to say. Rey Horus then attacks the knee. Dragon Lee hits a huge suicide dive that takes himself out and Bandido. So this leaves Rey Horus and Roosh alone in the ring. Roosh hits the bull's horns for the win in this one. I really enjoyed this match. I don't think it was very long. It didn't feel super long, but it also might have been just because these guys were moving so quickly. But these four are nonstop action regardless. But when you add in Lucha Rules and all four stay involved almost the entire match, Roosh may have actually hurt himself, as I said. I'm interested to sort of look into that. May have just sold it really well. The guy's a good professional wrestler, so it's entirely possible he's working us. This match, as I said, wasn't super long. The action never stopped, and these four work really well together. I'm sure they have tons of experience working together, so I quite enjoyed this match. It was one of my favorites with the six-man tag match, I would say. We then get Quinn McKay. She comes out to announce some matches for Death Before Dishonor, which I guess is the next pay-per-view. I'm not quite sure when that's coming. I didn't catch the date. But we're going to get Shane Taylor Promotions defending their titles against Roosh, Dragon Lee, and Kenny King. So that match should be a lot of fun. We'll also get the finals of the women's tournament, a mystery match between two recent free agents. So ROH is apparently getting out there and looking at some new signings with a whole bunch of people being released all the time by WWE. So that frees up some talent for other companies, I guess. We'll also get a four-way elimination match for the ROH title on that Death Before Dishonor show. which will be Bandido defending against Brody King, EC3, and Demonic Flamita. I don't know what EC3 and Flamita have done to qualify for this, but I know Brody King was considered the next contender. So that should be a pretty fun match as well. I'm not a huge EC3 fan, but he's not bad, and the other three are pretty awesome, so it should be a fun match. We then get the main event bloodbath, which was a steel cage match in this, I think, year-long or possibly more feud between Vincent and Matt Taven. So Vincent ends up defeating Taven in this match. And going into this match, I thought it was going to be interesting for me because I have little interest in this feud or this match. If you've listened to the show before, you know I'm not a big Matt Taven as a babyface fan. It just does not work for me. Yet this match is positioned as the main event, so it could have some crazy action. I was hoping to like it, and I just wish that the story had connected more with me along the way. So I understand this being the main event, because as I'm sort of critical of ROH for not having a lot of storylines on the go, this is one that's been on the go forever, so I get that they're focused on that. I have no problem with that. So for this one, Mike Bennett joins commentary. So Vincent kicks the door into Taven as he climbs the step right away. Then Taven slams the door on a diving Vincent, and we're underway actually outside of the cage for quite a bit as this one starts. Taven leaps the barricade and Vincent hits him with a chair out of midair. So they finally get in the cage and the crowd even cheers, because I think sometimes when you're brawling into the crowd and things, it's hard for certain people in certain seats to see what's going on. So they appreciated these guys getting back in the cage where they belong, I think. So lots of run-ins at this, or people coming down, I guess, at this point. Bateman comes down with barbed wire and he sort of shoves it through the cage so they have access to it. Bennett then at one point leaves commentary to go try and neutralize Bateman, and they have some action out on the floor. Eventually, the barbed wire sort of gets stretched out across a section of the cage and attached, and it ends up in Taven's head, and he's bloody. It's Vincent, I guess, running Taven's head into it, but you can see Taven's wearing thick gloves for this match, and he's like grabbing the barbed wire and rubbing it into his own head, which kind of took me out of it a little bit. It was clear that Taven was the one controlling the barbed wire in his own head, but he's a bloody mess after this, obviously. So he finds the time a little bit later to give Vincent a crown of barbed wire, just keeps wrapping it around this guy's head as he starts to bleed as well. Then Taven hits a DDT to Vincent with the barbed wire around his head. Taven then goes and pulls an axe, yes, an axe, from under the edge of the ring, and he starts cutting Vincent's head with it. So he's not swinging the axe, but he's using the blade on Vincent's head. So there's blood everywhere at this point. So Vita Von Starr walks down to the ring. She throws a bag over the top of the cage and into the ring, which of course is filled with tacks. Von Starr then climbs up on the top of the cage, goes for a crossbody to Taven, misses, hits Vincent instead. Impressive, a crossbody off the top of the cage. That's cool. Then, surprisingly, Matt Taven gives Von Starr a backdrop, and she lands on the tacks. In fact, sort of thrashes into them even more than when she actually landed. We get Taven's move, the climax, onto the thumbtacks for a near fall, and then I see the ref in the background. He's sort of pulling tacks from his knees as he's having to drop down to make these pinfall counts. Poor guy. Taven misses a splash off the top of the cage. Vincent hits a tornado bulldog onto the tacks. So then the final member of Vincent's group, Dutch, he comes out. He climbs the cage. Taven climbs up to meet Dutch. Taven kicks Dutch off the cage. He falls backwards through a table that's been set up at ringside. But Vincent takes this opportunity as Taven's up on top. He quickly climbs up top, hits a top rope cutter to Taven, and he picks up the win with that top rope cutter. So this was obviously a pretty insane match. I get the use of the barbed wire, even though it's not really my thing, but I found it particularly slowed the momentum because they had to sort of get it out there, stretch it out, put it across a part of the cage, tease running into it a little bit. And then, as I said, Taven was pretty clearly cutting himself with the barbed wire as he was wearing some thick gloves for this match. I like the action outside the ring to start, actually, and I really like the final few minutes inside the ring as well. There definitely was a lot of interference, and I think some people are going to have a problem with that, but it's really consistent with the story and Vincent's group, that this is a group that will sacrifice themselves for Vincent and will get involved. So that kind of made sense. It didn't really bother me as much as I think it may some people. The level of Von Starr's involvement surprised me because I'm watching Impact regularly. They're having mixed tag matches on, they had a whole tournament about it. And in those mixed matches, the men barely engage with the women, even though technically they're supposed to be able to. And here's ROH coming along with a man backdropping a woman onto tack. So that's quite the contrast. The bottom line, These two guys worked their butts off. They took some stupid risks, put on an entertaining match. I'm not a huge fan of these types of like just bloody deathmatch type of things for the sake of them, but I know a lot of people will like this match more than I did. I'm not saying it's a bad match. It's just one of, it's not my style of match, but these guys, I mean, they gave their all. You can't say they didn't in this. So if it's your type of match, you'll probably really enjoy it. It's just not mine. So I thought it was entertaining, but I'm not crazy about it. So overall, I thought this pay-per-view was good in-ring, but pretty weak, as I've said a few times, storyline-wise. I really liked the LFI match, the 8-man tag match, and the 6-man championship match. The other matches were fine, but seemed kind of randomly thrown together with no real storyline behind many of them. The main event was definitely a spectacle. Not the type I generally enjoy, but it wasn't bad, for sure. If I were more invested in the story, I likely would have enjoyed it more, and I imagine a lot of people did like it. So this felt like a B show to me. Maybe higher wrestling-wise, but I'm going to take some marks away for the lack of build and just kind of throwing matches together. As they're kind of at the mercy of not having enough TV time to get all these guys developed on TV. All right, so that's going to wrap up night two of Glory by Honor, and I thought I would, at this point, transition into Ring of Honor episode 518, which showed up on my PVR, or maybe DVR if you're in the States. I don't know what we call it up here. And that showed up on my PVR on August 22nd, ROH 518. So this show starts with a recap of last week's Champions versus All-Stars match where Flip Gordon pinned Homicide after a pile driver. We then see Ian Riccaboni is back at the desk because Quinn McKay will be in action tonight facing Roxy in the quarterfinals of the women's tournament, as well as Miranda Alize taking on Nicole Savoy in another quarterfinal match of that same tournament. And the main event tonight will feature Rey Oris taking on Demonic Flamita in what is a no disqualification match. So Brian Zane is backstage. He has both Quinn and Roxy with him, and he mentions that Roxy hoped to face Quinn in the quarterfinals. Quinn kind of bristles at this and immediately wants to know why that's the case. Quinn assumes it's because she's an interviewer. Roxy says that's not the reason, and she starts to try to explain, but her music hits and she needs to head out to the ring, so she leaves before she can really explain herself. Quinn stays behind for a minute, says that she's still going to try her best regardless of why Roxy wanted to face her. So I thought this was a little bit of a different approach, because usually they go with a pre-recorded quick little 90-second or less promo for each person, so I appreciate a little bit of change in the routine here. Roxy didn't really get to say anything, and Quinn did a fine job. She's a really strong babyface, so I think she did a good job here. So then we transition into that match, Quinn McKay and Roxy. So neither woman have a ton of experience. Roxy's only 19, and Quinn McKay is sort of making the shift from being a commentator. Although I have noticed, or I heard them say at one point, that Roxy has wrestled more matches than almost anyone during the pandemic. So she's been getting as much seasoning as she possibly can. And she did impress me in a previous match in this tournament. So we get holds and counters on the mat for quite a while to start this one, as each woman's looking for an advantage. Roxy's using her flexibility to escape a couple of Quinn's holds. We get a back handspring double knee drop by Roxy. That's pretty cool. Quinn then hits three shoulder tackles and a creative roll-up attempt for a two count. Quinn dominates a test of strength and sort of turns it into a couple near falls. We then get Roxy with a top rope lucha arm drag, a double clothesline, and both of the competitors kip up at the same time. Quinn then starts to sell a knee injury after escaping a corner move from Roxy. Roxy even goes in to check on Quinn, but Quinn slaps her, so that kind of fires Roxy up and she's done sort of being friendly, and now she's going to really attack. So she hits an uppercut and a suplex. Roxy misses a double knee in the corner. Quinn tries to apply the tangerine dream, but Roxy escapes. Quinn hits a neck breaker a little bit later for a near fall. She then catches Roxy coming off the ropes, hits a belly-to-belly suplex. Her knee gives out, then that's Quinn on a fireman's carry shortly after, and Roxy hits her code red, picks up the pinfall win over Quinn McKay, and is going to move on to the semifinals, and Quinn has been eliminated. To be honest, I thought this match was just okay. Quinn is still fairly limited, but she's getting invaluable experience from this tournament, and she has strong potential as a babyface for sure. Roxy, I've found a little bit inconsistent from what I've seen. She's looked better than this before, but again, she's working with a pretty inexperienced opponent here, and she's only 19 herself, so maybe I'm asking too much from this match. I didn't think it was great, but my expectations weren't super high to begin with. I've definitely preferred other matches by each of these women in this exact same tournament. So I still think there's huge potential for both of them. I just don't know if this was their best showing. So the next match we get in the tournament is Miranda Alize, the Lucha Baddie, versus Nicole Savoy. Chelsea Green is on commentary for this one. So they each, it's kind of the older method now, they each get like an inset promo as they're making their entrance for the match. So Alize goes first. She basically says she advanced in the tournament like she said she would. Her last match proved that she is the best, and tonight she feels strong and apologized in advance to Savoy because Alize is coming for everything she deserves. I thought she showed good confidence, pretty good personality here, fairly generic promo, but I mean, she delivered it well. They don't get much time or creativity in these, but I thought she did a good job delivering it. Savoy gets the same chance to speak next, and she says she knows Miranda well. They were training partners, roommates, and friends, but this is about the title at the end of this tournament, and she is putting their friendship aside for this. I thought it was fine. She does not display a ton of charisma to me. A very straightforward promo. I did like that it gave me some backstory between these two, that they're friends, training partners, etc. I always appreciate that, but I don't find Savoy very charismatic for sure. We get holds and counters as the match starts. Alize needs to find a rope break pretty early. Hammerlock with a bridge by Savoy, countered by Alize, who bites Savoy's fingers. We get a Hurricanrana by Alize, sending Savoy to the floor. Dropkick through the ropes by Alize to Savoy on the floor. Savoy suplexes Alize while they're outside. Basement dropkick once back in the ring by Alize for a two count. We get a German with the bridge by Savoy for two. High knee and a fallaway slam by Savoy. We get a strike exchange, three butterfly suplexes by Savoy for a two count before transitioning into an arm breaker. There's a cross face by Alize, but Savoy rolls free, hits a knee and a Michinoku driver for two. Savoy then catches a super kick, Savoy takes a super kick from Alize and then a draping DDT out of the corner. Alize then, a little bit later, hits her drive-by kick, pins Savoy to advance to the semifinals of this tournament. Savoy, I'm kind of torn on her. She has some moments where she looks good in the ring, but she does not exude a whole lot of personality, at least in this tournament from what I've seen, and her knee strikes look incredibly weak. She hits some decent moves along the way, but she's really slow in her movements, and some of her offense doesn't look very realistic to me. Green surprisingly added nothing on commentary. She was quite boring, would be the word I would use. She didn't really add anything. I thought Alize looked pretty good, definitely showed more personality and fire than her opponent in this. I like this better than the opening women's match tonight. There was a much more variety in the offensive moves. I still wouldn't say it was great. I would say it was fine, as we're known to say here on FNS Wrestling. It was fine. So then we get a little bit of a promo here as the Bouncers and Ken Dixon are backstage talking amongst themselves about how people have viewed them as a joke in the past for too long just because they're different. Well, now they're bringing a different attitude and they're going to laugh at everyone else because everybody else is all the same. With Dixon in their group, they're going to free people of their burden of their petty little lives, which I'm not sure what they're trying to say there. I think they're trying to be a bit too clever, maybe. Dixon tries to add something, but Malonis cuts him off. They argue briefly about Dixon losing to OGK after Dixon says he's here to win. Brawler says that they are, when they're together, they can't be stopped and will win the tag team gold, six-man tag team gold, because when they are on the same page, they are unstoppable. I thought this promo was fine. I'm not a huge fan of this group. I'm actually most interested in Ken Dixon because I haven't seen much of him. The other guys I've seen forever, and I pretty much know what they're all about. I like that they're trying a new attitude and getting away from sort of the comedy stuff that they do quite a bit. But I'm not sold on this either, but I guess we'll see where it goes. Some of the lines seem to be trying a little bit too hard to be cute and seem somewhat out of character for these guys. But I guess they're maybe in the midst of sort of a character change, so I should give them a break. I thought this was just okay, I guess. We then move to the main event, which is a no DQ match between Rey Oris and Demonic Flamita, former teammates in Mexa Squad, but they've been sort of feuding for quite a while now. So we cut to a quick Flamita promo where he says that for one more time, he will prove who the best member of Mexa Squad was. He will bury the other members of Mexa Squad one by one. So it sounds like he's basically saying he's going to win this match and hopefully move on to take on Bandido. It was just a really quick promo, all in Spanish, but he did a good job. Oris then speaks. He tells us he's going to speak Spanish specifically so Flamita will understand what he's saying. He says it's time to get things clear. Today is the moment that he will be better and the sun of Tijuana will shine on Flamita. I thought this was short and sweet, nothing groundbreaking, but solid and just leading us into this match. So right away, these two start slapping each other, and then a whole bunch of quickness is displayed by both of them. Flamita stops a Rey Oris dive attempt with a kick to the head. Flamita gets a chair, but Oris drop kicks it right into Flamita's face. Oris goes to slingshot over the ropes, but Flamita throws a chair into his face and then taunts him. Oris is run into the barricade twice, and he goes back to get a chair. Flamita drops Oris face first on the chair. It hits a super kick. We get a suplex by Flamita after a running drop kick to Oris's leg. Flamita sets up a chair in between the ropes in the corner before hitting a drop kick. Oris is then Irish whipped headfirst into that chair in the corner. It looked really good. They replayed it. It looked like very good contact. Oris throws a chair at Flamita, then hits a DDT on the floor. Flamita is run into the ring post and then hit with a chair to the back. We get a high crossbody off the top by Oris and a nice belly-to-belly overhead into the turnbuckles. We get a butterfly backbreaker by Flamita for a two count. A ripcord C4 by Flamita, but sort of a pendulum DDT by Oris. And they do the same sort of moves again right after this, and now both men are down. They battle up top, and there's a table set up on the floor. Ridiculous Spanish fly by Flamita off the top rope through the table on the floor. Just a crazy looking spot. Both men are down. Flamita gets up first and puts Rey Oris back in the ring. Tries to pin him, but just gets a two count. So Flamita goes back up top, hits a big Phoenix splash, and does pick up the win here. He says then, we can overhear him saying that he wants Bandido next. So I really like this match, but these guys have had so many interactions lately for me. That being said, they're both incredibly fast and talented. They almost always, well, I think always, I can say that I've seen put on entertaining matches. It's just not the freshest thing because I've seen it already, but nonetheless, a very strong match, a fun main event to watch for sure. I'm happy that Flamita won. I do prefer him to Oris. And I'm not sure if this earns him a title shot, but I guess he's. We find out he is going into the four-man match, so he will certainly add something to that. He's pretty fantastic, so he and Bandido and the other two, I'm sure, will put on a really entertaining match. So overall thoughts on this show? I didn't think it was a particularly strong episode of Ring of Honor. It annoys me slightly that they just had a two-night pay-per-view with a million matches, but there's no mention of it on the show basically a couple days later. Obviously, I'm sure the television stuff is recorded beforehand, but it's still sort of awkward that there's no mention of a two-night pay-per-view that just happened. The opening women's match I thought was just okay. The second women's match was better, but still not the strongest I've seen. The main event was really good, but again, not a fresh matchup, nor did it involve any of the company's main eventers. So not a lot of star power on this episode of Ring of Honor, but that does happen because they have so little TV time and they can't get everybody on. I understand that. I would say that this show for me this week was a B-. It had one good match, one decent match, and one just kind of okay match. So not the strongest offering. I liked last week's episode a lot better, but I did think the main event was fun. And I do look forward to the finish of the women's tournament to see where that goes now that we're down to the semifinals. That should be probably a couple more matches next week from that tournament. So I think that's going to bring us to the end of this podcast. Hopefully I will be back. I think tomorrow my son and I are planning on talking about, what was it, Impact Wrestling's Emergence, I think it was, that was on Friday. So we'll probably run down that. We're also planning on doing another episode where we're going to talk about SummerSlam, which we didn't really enjoy, and TakeOver 36, which we really enjoyed some of it, and some of it was just okay. So if you'd like to hear our thoughts on that, keep your eyes peeled, because I assume we'll get that up tomorrow everywhere. Wherever you're listening to this, that will come up. I think I'm going to call it a night, because I'm hoping to post this before midnight, get it up, because I've been on a streak of getting these up on a Monday. So as I always say, thanks for any time you give to listen to me or me and my son talk about wrestling from our basement. It's really appreciated. We hope you enjoy what we're giving you. And we'll be back in the next day or two with a little bit more. So just keep your eyes out. And until then, take care.